Bom dia, boa tarde. Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 215. This is the International Break Edition. Portugal, of course, with a terrific result against Sweden. I know some of you wish that Portugal would play even stronger competition, but I thought Sweden was decent. I'll talk a little bit about the Sweden match. I'll talk a little bit about Slovenia. I'll talk about giving Roberto Martinez more respect than I think, you know, I don't think he deserves more. I don't think he's getting enough. I had my doubts about him in the beginning, but I think so far he's done a pretty good job, especially in his close to, 14 months in charge so far. We'll talk about a pretty interesting thing. Eight players after the match against Sweden went back to their clubs. Another eight players are coming in. I've never seen that before. I'll talk about that. And, of course, we'll have our first division, second division report, women's football. We have a new manager in Liga Betclic, a new manager at Família Cong. I'll talk about that in a minute. And then, of course, I'll also do my Big Four report. And then I'll end it with yet another great week for my favorite team in Portugal in the fifth tier, my hometown team. Continuing to make their way toward possible promotion to the fourth tier. Let's get going here, and let me talk first off about, of course, the terrific result. Look, 5-2 against Sweden. Rafael Leão, Mateus Nunes, Bruno Fernandes, Bruma, and Gonçalo Ramos with the goals. Portugal, they just looked great. They were up 4-0 until Sporting's Goyokeres scored. Sweden scored a goal right at around the 90th minute, but Portugal just, they looked good. You know, and that's the one thing that I have to say is I think that with Roberto Martinez as manager, they've scored something like 41 goals. We know what they did in European qualifying. And, you know, back in the days of the golden generation, Rui Costa, Luis Figo, Paulo Sousa, Fernando Couto, Jorge Costa, Vitor Bahia, back in those days, the golden generation used to always have a bad result in qualifying or a disappointing result in a warm-up match, in a friendly match. And there was always that disappointing result that would happen. It hasn't happened so far with Martinez. I mean, it has really been a very positive 14 months. I know some of you wish they would play a Germany or a France or an England. But there's probably going to be opportunities to do that this summer. But I think right now, the players on the national team are feeling good. I think Roberto Martinez is feeling good. And they're scoring goals, which I think is very important in this. And scoring 5 goals against Sweden is a very nice accomplishment, playing up north in Guimarães, where a lot of fans were very excited to see them play in Guimarães. And they just looked really, really good. The one thing I'm a little bit concerned about, though, is, and again, I'm not going to put any doubt, and I'm not going to second guess Roberto Martinez, because so far he's been pushing all the right buttons, and that is the fact that they had 8 players that left after the Portugal match, went back to their clubs, Bernardo Silva, Ruben Dias, João Palhinha, Nelson Semedo, Toti Gomes, Rafael Leão, Bruno Fernandes, and Gonçalo Ramos have left camp. They are now going to Slovenia, but then you have 8 players that are coming into camp for the first time on this break. And that's, of course, Diego Dolo, João Cancelo, Danilo, Octavio, Ruben Neves, Vitinha, João Felix, and, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo. They are all coming here into town, and they're going to be here to play for the Slovenia match. In all my years, 25-plus years of doing PortugueseSoccer.com, I honestly don't remember a time when, you know, sometimes you might see maybe 2 players leave. We've seen Cristiano leave in the middle of a break. You know, I've never seen 8 in terms of, and one of the things that I did wrong before, by the way, when I was talking previously about the squad selections is, you know, last week I talked about how I think they were going to, he was going to call up Jota Silva. That's exactly what he did. I didn't think he was going to call up Chico Conceição. But the one thing I did not realize until after the fact when I recorded my last episode is, you know, this is friendlies. You could call up 30, 32 players, which is kind of what Roberto Martinez did this time around. In the Europeans, you know, the Euro this summer, by the way, we're going back to a 23-player limit squad size. It had been increased for COVID. It was increased for the last Euro. It goes back to 23. So I was kind of thinking along the lines of only 23, 24 players when I said that I didn't think Chico Conceição. And again, I know he scored this weekend for Porto. I'm still not too high on him. I know a lot of Porto fans are disappointed that he left 2 years ago to Ajax and that didn't quite work out, but maybe he's rejuvenating his career. But I got to admit that that was a surprise call up. But I thought Jota Silva getting the start. I mean, this is a player, coming onto the pitch later as a sub. This is a player 5 years ago that was playing in the districts. You know, the districts that I talk about with Atlético dos Arcos, that type of league at the bottom, there's one in Porto. This guy, Jota Silva, was playing in that 5 years ago, and that just tells you why the dreams start a lot of times at the lower levels. Sometimes it's with, the youth teams, if players are fortunate to get on the youth team of a big club. But for a lot of players, they have to start at the district level, and I think that that's, in my opinion, why this is such a great story with Jota Silva. But a fantastic result for Portugal against Sweden. Great crowd of close to around 27,000 in one of the more passionate areas in Portugal for Portuguese football, Portuguese soccer. And again, I just think it's a great result. And I got to give Roberto Martinez my due. He is really pressing all the right buttons. And whenever this team scores, they definitely score. And in that regard, when I think about the long history of this team, I just think that 14 months of the success we had with Roberto Martinez, you have to acknowledge that that is positive. And yeah, okay, they're not playing a European giant, of course, but at the end of the day, I think you need to be happy. Now, as far as the Slovenia match that's coming up this weekend or coming up next, first off, I'm surprised they're playing Slovenia. I would have thought this would have been an opportunity for Portugal to maybe play one of the really strong teams at the higher level of Europe. But nevertheless, they're going. And I'm surprised they're going to Slovenia for this match. Slovenia, their last five matches, they tied 2-2 with Malta. They beat USA 1-0, beat Kazakhstan 2-1. Kazakhstan just lost their playoff in European competition, so they're having a decent season. But Slovenia beat them 2-1. They did lose to Denmark, one of the sort of top 15 teams usually ranked in the world, 2-1. And then they beat Northern Ireland 1-0. So there's not really a lot to say about this team, in my opinion. I don't admit to understanding them that much. I think if you're Roberto Martinez, the goal here is score goals, try to keep a clean sheet, try to make sure that nobody gets hurt. And most importantly, for any of the newer players that get to play, this is really their last chance to make it, because once they get going in June, let us not forget, once they get going in June, that'll be pretty much the 23 players. You'll probably see 24, 25 in camp, but officially only 23 are going to be going to Germany. So, again, it's going to be another interesting match against Slovenia. Portugal is the heavy favorite here. And, of course, if you live in Slovenia and you find out now that Cristiano Ronaldo is coming to your country, that has to be a big, big, exciting thing for the people in Slovenia. Let me move on now with my Liga report. And there's a lot to talk about with the Liga. Coach Benfica, a lot of controversy there. Goya Koresh gave an interview this week with the Sporting Press, the Portuguese press. So I'm going to kind of touch on that. But let me just start off first. There was a managerial change in the first division. International breaks are not a manager's favorite time for two reasons. One, they have to find teams to play scrimmages or training matches with, and they'd rather be playing every week to keep the players in shape, especially because a lot of the smaller clubs don't usually have a lot of players away on international break. So players are always together, not to mention the fact that for some of the smaller clubs, they're not making any money because they're not playing really any matches. But the big news this week is that Armando Evangelista is the new manager. He's a familiar face. He's managed Guimarães. He's managed pretty much all over the league. And again, he's a manager that knows about Portuguese football, knows about the type of resources they have and he has to work with. And he has been named the new manager over at Famalicão, even though Famalicão is in eighth place. At one time, they were battling for fifth, and they've kind of dropped off. João Pedro Sousa, who brought them up from the second division to the first division, was then let go. Then he comes back for a second time to manage Familiar Kong, and now he's being let go again for a second time, this time happening, you know, it's only March. There's still, you know, 2 months of the season left, but a decision was made. But there was a managerial change. Lyon Lady in the second division also changed their manager. Apparently their manager decided that he wasn't going to come back next year. So guess what Lady did? They said, okay, if you have no plans to come back next year, then bye-bye. We'll let you go right now. And that's the story that I've read about with regard to Lyon Lady and the second division getting a new manager. But, you know, before I talk about the controversy with Gochu, obviously, Benfica right now, Sporting right now in first place with 65 points. Benfica in second with 64, but Sporting really in control, having played one last match. That match, by the way, Sporting and Familiar Kong has already been decided. It'll be on Tuesday, April the 16th. So that'll be played in less than a month. But Sporting 65, Benfica 64, Porto 58, Braga 53, and Vitória Guimarães with 50. And those are pretty much your top five clubs that are battling. Plenty of time to talk about match day 27 next week. But looking ahead, there's really no, you know, I had a very hard time picking what was a very good match. I say maybe Estrela Amadora Sporting is probably the best match in terms of the big three. Benfica's playing last place Chaves. FC Porto's playing another team that's been pretty much dropping. But it is a team that has a success against them. Porto making the trip to Estoril Praia. But those are pretty much the big matches. And Braga is going to be playing against Portimonense. And again, there's plenty of time to talk about that next week. But there was some interesting results in the second division last week. First off, give it up to Nacional from Madeira, making that trip to the Açores. And Nacional recording the 1-0 win at Santa Clara. It was only the second time this season that Santa Clara lost a match in the second division. That's how strong they've been. And Nacional keeps their hopes up alive with a very, very big win. This is a club, Nacional, that has a long history in the first division, but these last few years they've been in the second division. But it's very interesting now, the race. You got Santa Clara, 56 points. AVS, 56 points. So both of them are tied for the top two. But Nacional now is only 5 points behind the top two in that playoff for third place with 51 points. Marítimo also benefits with Santa Clara's loss. They are in fourth place with 48 points. So they are pretty much still in the hunt for that playoff for third place, which takes on the 16th place team in the first division. Torrents, my favorite club from Torres Vedras, sitting in fifth place with 39, but they are really way out of it. But you know what? Top five finish for that club from Torres Vedras. I can tell you a lot of people that are pretty proud of that, considering 2 years ago they were playing in the third division. But that is, but again, going back to Nacional, and AVS had an opportunity to take over first place, but they were only able to manage a 1-1 draw at Olivarense. And that's how it ends. Match day 27, not this weekend, but next weekend. Looking at the thing, the best match, of course, you've got is pretty obvious. AVS, second place, taking on first place Santa Clara. That is going to be your match next weekend, the day before Easter, by the way. There is, by the way, some Easter football. Actually, there's no Easter football next Saturday. There is, I think, one match in the first division. But next weekend, there's three days of matches. No matches on Sunday. And obviously the best match, again, is second place AVS taking on Santa Clara. Nacional will be making the trip to Leiria. They'll be staying in the mainland. And Marítimo, they will be at home to Leixões, which has been struggling a little bit in 14th place. But again, the second division, I think, Santa Clara AVS still in the top two, but Nacional not too far behind in third place. Let's move on now to women's football. First off, I don't know if it's a good result or a bad result, but Benfica women were playing in the quarterfinals of the Champions League for the first time against Lyon of France. They scored first, but unfortunately they wound up losing at home 2-1. Still opportunity, but like I say with the men, and I'm going to say this with the women, when you lose at home, or you don't beat a team by at least two goals, it gets very difficult in European competition, especially playing a club like Lyon, which has a tremendous reputation in women's football. But nevertheless, Benfica for a while there, they gave their fans a lot of excitement when they scored the goal against Lyon. Right now in women's football, it continues to be led by Benfica with 44 points, Sporting in second with 39. The top two teams in women's football will advance next year to play in the Champions League, so Benfica and Sporting are looking good. Braga sits in third place with 32 points, 7 points off of second place. It's not really looking good for them. And Racing Power FC, one of the more interesting names, I think, in Portuguese football, also is tied with Braga with 32 points. And we do have football this weekend. Famalicão will be hosting Sporting. First place Benfica will be playing at home to third place Braga. And Racing Power FC will be at home as well this weekend. They'll be taking on Villarreal de Gaia. And that is the football for this weekend. So there is football this weekend in Portugal. And again, Benfica in control with 44 points, followed by Sporting in second with 39 points. Moving on, let's talk about the Big Four. And obviously, I want to start off talking about Benfica and Coutinho with the interview he gave this weekend. First off, it was interesting because he didn't give it back to his country in Turkey. He didn't give it to a Portuguese newspaper. He gave it to a newspaper in Holland, which is where he used to play before he came for Benfica. But it caught Benfica off guard. He expressed his frustration that he's not being played right by Schmidt. He mentioned that he has talked about this to the club already. Schmidt was very disappointed. Said that before the pre-match press conference last week. He said he would talk to Coutinho when he comes back from international break. But this is very surprising. First off, this is a 22. There are 22 million reasons why this is a big problem for Benfica. Number one, it's because Benfica spent 22 million, the highest money they've ever spent on a player to get him. And this is a player right now whose value. Do you think you're going to be able to sell him for 22 million right now? Not even close. Not even close. But he came out and defended himself, saying that he did tell the club he was frustrated. He did tell the club that he felt he was not playing in the right position. And even though he has some decent statistics, he felt he could do a lot better. And he gave this interview. And it's a tough spot for Benfica because you can't bench him and send him to the B team or to train by himself because you spent 22 million on him. You need his value to be at a place where you can recoup your money. He did sign a big contract. He's not going away anytime soon. And obviously, Schmidt is still the manager. So, you know, I could see Schmidt not playing him. And if he does play him, I wonder if Rui Costa would be putting pressure on him to play to try to see if they can get some value from him. But, hey, a lot of players would never think of giving an interview talking against their club. It is just something that you do not do in Portuguese football. And I got to admit that Coutinho really surprised a lot of people by doing that. And he defends himself by saying that he's told the club his frustration, but they're not acting on it. And, you know, he did not come to Portugal. You know, he came to Portugal, and he admitted this because it was a big opportunity in his career to set himself up for a bigger opportunity in his career. And the truth of the matter is he feels like he's wasting this year because he hasn't been able to do anything. So I thought that was a very surprising interview. And again, I think Coutinho, if you're Coutinho, this is a very difficult situation for him. It's a difficult situation for Schmidt. That's a very difficult situation for Rui Costa, who allowed the club to spend $22 million on him. And right now they've got to find a way to fix this problem very fast. Benfica's other problem is that Otamendi and Di Maria are in the States. I didn't realize that they were playing. Argentina was playing, I think, El Salvador and Philadelphia, not too far from where I am. And then they're going to be traveling cross-country to go play at the L.A. Coliseum. I think that's where USC football plays, college football. They're going to be playing another friendly out there. So Di Maria and Otamendi, not only are they playing in the States, Philadelphia is not necessarily that long. I mean, it's a trip, yeah. But going from Philadelphia to L.A., and then probably from L.A. back to Portugal. My guess is they'll be flying out of San Francisco and going directly to Portugal because San Francisco has a direct flight. That is a very, very long trip for those two players. And when Antonio Silva is suspended for the next match, this is a very, very tough situation for Benfica because they're going to need Otamendi and they're going to need him fresh, and these players are only going to be arriving on the eve of their match against the last place Chaves. So that is very, very interesting to see. By the way, before I continue, two things that I forgot to mention in the Liga report. And before I do that, let me also say, you got any comments? You don't like something I don't say? You want to say something to the world? Use my opportunity here at podcast. I've got a comment coming up at the end that I'll be doing. Somebody that wanted to say some stuff. PSoccerCom@gmail.com. PSoccerCom@gmail.com is my email. Please give a follow to this podcast, PortugueseSoccer.com podcast, at iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, Podcast Addict. I also put up the audio on YouTube. Thanks to those that follow. And as I always say, if you want to support this, please follow it on all the different platforms. It'd be highly, highly appreciated. And again, any comments or questions, anything, PSoccerCom@gmail.com. Before I continue with the Big Four report, let me just get two things in that I realized in my notes that I missed. First off, Portugal, the logo for the World Cup bid for 2030 came out this week with Portugal, Morocco, and Spain. And apparently Portugal had wanted to host the World Cup final, but in order to do that, you need a stadium that has a minimum of 80,000 seats. So Portugal's biggest stadium, I think, is 60. I think it's Benfica's. So Portugal right now is working for the World Cup in 2030 to try to get a semifinal, probably and most likely at Benfica Stadium. That was some big news that came out this weekend, that Benfica Stadium could potentially be in the running to host a semifinal of a World Cup coming up in 2030. And again, I've spoken in the past about how I think Portugal should be getting more matches. It seems like Spain is getting a lot. Morocco's getting some. I think Portugal should be working to get more matches. So hopefully they also get the semifinal. And one other thing, Bruno Fernandes came out this week basically saying that players should not be booked for taking off their shirts during celebration. He thinks that that should be part of the fun of scoring a goal. It's a part of the fun that the fans like to see. I agree with Bruno Fernandes on that. I think that this is a total waste of time to give somebody a card for celebrating. Look, it's not a basketball game where they're scoring over 100 points and there's a lot of moments when you see scoring. I mean, sometimes in soccer, sometimes in football, all you really see is 2 to 3 goals. So, but I just wanted to get that. Let me move on with Porto. Galeno, who's with Brazilian national team, was asked about Portugal again, about playing for Portugal, and he was very clear and concise that his heart is in it to play for Brazil, even if he doesn't get a chance to be called up for a real match and only friendlies. I thought that was a bit surprising, but again, that's his decision. But you know what? Portugal, Brazil, with the midfield they had, it'd probably be hard for him anyway to play. Pinto da Costa, Andres Villas-Boas, the battle continues when it comes to talking about the campaign and both of them attacking each other. Big thing that Pinto da Costa said, that he wants to start a women's football team, which they should have started a long time ago. He wants to start a futsal team, and he also wants to start surfing. I don't admit to being very knowledgeable about surfing. I know Nazaré in Portugal is one of the best places in the world. I think even Netflix did a show about it. I think there's like a whole thing on Netflix, if you ever want to catch it out, about the waves in Nazaré. But it looks like he also wants to bring surfing. But the two main things here is he wants to start a women's football team and he wants to start futsal, which I believe is also one of the promises that Andres Villas-Boas has made. So I think this has been to the cost. And why Porto doesn't have a women's team just doesn't make any sense. It's great for women's football. Right now Braga is the biggest team in Portugal that has a team up north in Minho in terms of one of the bigger clubs, Família Gongtu, Vila Verdense. But Porto really is missing not having a women's team in Portuguese football. Sporting, Goyacres gave an interview, and I always say that when players do interviews, I never understand. They're asked the same questions, and they give the same answers. Goyacres was asked about the transfers, and he had to sort of deflect the question about his future by saying that he was thinking only of winning trophies with Sporting, and he gave the very expected answer. I'm just one of those that when they ask a player a question, I kind of already know what they're going to say. So I'm one of those that believes maybe you should just ask a different question. But he basically came out and said that right now he's only thinking about sporting and he's not thinking about his future, nor can he predict his future. But I think we all know what his future is going to be in June or July. He's going to be sold for a lot of money by Sporting. Braga's president, Antonio Salvador, if you don't know him, he's certainly one of the more influential people in Portuguese football, came out this week. He did an interview in the newspapers, and he was asked about the future of Artur Jorge, the manager, who some say will be leaving after the season, and apparently Arouca's Daniel Souza might be in line to get the Braga job. He was asked about it, and he said, "Hey, my manager is Artur Jorge, and that's who my manager is." So he didn't even bother to touch the subject of Daniel Souza, mostly because Daniel Souza is the manager of another club in their area. So why would you want to talk about a manager? Again, why ask him that question when you know that's what he's going to say? Might as well just ask him a different question, in my opinion. But, you know, that's just what I think. Let me move on here. And, of course, with international break, not really a whole lot to talk about. But I do want to talk about my favorite club in Portugal. And, again, if you are brand new, I support a team very ferociously in the fifth tier called Atlético dos Arcos. It is my parents' hometown team in Portugal. And Atlético dos Arcos, for a while there, they were stuck only leading by 3 points. They were in first place. But now they're leading by, well, actually, if you look at the table, they're actually leading by 10 points over Mutsong, but Mutsong has played one less match, which I expect them to win against Melga Sant. So right now we have a 7-point lead. My club, Atlético dos Arcos, in the fifth tier, we have a 7-point lead, and we have basically 5 matches left. And that's it. This weekend, we will be making the trip to Ancora Praia, who sits in seventh place. So that is not a very easy match. But again, we have a plus 48 goal differential. Ancora Praia has only a plus 2. So offensively, we've got to score. Mutsong will be making the trip to play one of our rivals, Punta Barca. If there's ever a time I'm rooting for Punta Barca, this is one of the very few times Punta Barca will be playing. They will be traveling to Mutsong. And then third place, Cordiolense. Basically, Arcus 64 points, Mutsong 54, Cordiolense 52. Cordiolense in third place. They're 12 points behind them, so I don't see them catching up, but nevertheless, they're still in third. They will be home taking on a club called Currense. So, again, if you're a weekly, you know I talk about this toward the end of my podcast. 7-point lead. It's 10 now, but again, I expect Mutsong to win and beat Melga Sant. 7-point lead with 5 matches left. That's really what it's all about. We get 3 more wins, and we will be promoted to the fourth tier, which, again, I've been waiting for a very, very long time. Let me wrap it up here now with the mailbag, and I've got one comment that I selected this week that I'm going to read. It's from one of my regulars, big Fire North fan, big Casapia fan. I believe he's from Holland, and that is, of course, Jack. And I have another question, comment for the mailbag. I would like to give a shout-out for the Portuguese players abroad, particularly this time for Leonardo Lopes and Nazinho, on loan from Sporting at Cercle Bruges in Belgium. Both have played a lot of minutes and put in many good performances, contributing to Cercle Bruges entering the Champions playoffs for the first time in a very, very long time. Thank you, Jack. We know there's a lot of Portuguese players abroad, and obviously these are two of the young ones that are getting experience and hoping that eventually Ruben Amorim will let them come back and maybe this summer be a part of the summer squad and make their case for being on the squad next year with Sporting. Anyway, folks, let me wrap up episode 215 of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Email psoccercom@gmail.com. And let me wrap it up here. As always, please take care of yourselves. Please take care of your family. And I'll talk to you soon. Ciao, everybody.